Hello and welcome to Matt's Truck and Grep podcast. It's Matt Ireland hosting once again, and today I'm joined once again, although for the first time on this particular podcast, Tomasz Orzynski, I think.
Tomasz Orzynski, that's me.
Orzynski. Hello, mate. How are you?
It's good. Don't feel wrong. I've been living in Scotland for 18 years and some people never learn to pronounce it.
The thing is, before we started, I think I just about had it nailed, and then I tried. Within 30 seconds, I've got it wrong.
I do feel you perfectly, because now I live in Finland and everybody got very strange names to me and I'm the same.
Yeah, fair enough, mate. Fair enough. So let's go sort of back to the beginning as such for the benefit of new listeners. How did you get involved in transport?
It was like I always traveled as a hitchhiker in Poland in my teenage years, and I really loved riding on trucks. And how I involved myself, it was that my friends had a small company and they were complaining to me how expensive sending stuff by courier is. And I already had a car and I told them, you pay me half of that and I will drive it for you to there and back. And that's how it started. Then they bought a van, which I was occasionally driving. And then I came to Scotland. And with this van driving experience, I got a job driving a Sprinter van for a laundry place in Glasgow. And then like just advanced to class two. And then I never did class one actually for another 15 years, because I always was lucky to have really good and interesting class two jobs. But then finally I upgraded to class one and I'm driving all over Europe.
All right, cool. That was obviously all in Poland. How did you end up coming to the UK then?
That was also a bit random thing, because I was graduating to become physics teacher. I studied physics
right,
at
okay.
University in Wrocław. And the rules back then was that when you passed all your exams, you had 2 years to write your dissertation.
Yeah.
And I wanted to earn some money. And of course, it was like 2004, 2005, 2006. Everybody was going to Britain to make some money, because back then going to Britain was really a good improvement in terms of salaries. So I went there hoping to like work for maybe 6 months and then come back and finish my degree. But they changed the rules.
Ah, typical.
And they said, I was sitting in Scotland and flying to Poland every couple of months to speak with my like dissertation supervisor. And once he said, oh, you need to go to the dean's office because they really want to speak with you. I went there and they told me, actually, the rules have changed and you don't have 2 years anymore. Now you have only 1 year. And because you are 18 months into your dissertation, it's like invalid anymore and you failed.
Ah, flipping egg.
They said like, if you want, you can like repeat your last semester, but also the program of the studies ended. So to repeat this last semester, I would actually have to go back to the university for another like 18 months and do all like differences in the courses, because the curriculum was different back then. And I was like, that's not fair.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, you know, screw that. I learned what I learned and I don't want to be a teacher in Poland anyway. And then because they like removed me from the students like community, I was no longer formally a student. And back then we still had a national service in Poland. And then the army wanted me. And I was like, so first my country is shafting me on my studies and now they want me to serve for this country. And that was all when like Polish army was in Iraq, which I was very hardly opposed. So I said, okay, I'm just staying in Scotland. And that's how I started.
Fair enough. So what made you get into driving then?
Well, I liked it. Mm-hmm. As I said, I was always fascinated by trucks and I'm not this kind of persons that I like to sit in the office and be involved in the office politics and do some dual job. Mm-hmm. So I've been driving for a few years. Then I've been a translator and interpreter for the Scottish police as well. And then I went to study, because the silver lining to all this university story from Poland was because I finished all my exams, but I just didn't get my degree. So I formally did not graduate it.
Yeah.
And in Scotland, for European Union citizens back then, the first degree was free. So I
right.
put And studies. So I eventually finished completely different studies in Glasgow University. And after that, I was okay, now I'm a proper graduate person. I will get a proper job. I ended up working in the office. I ran away screaming after 6 months and came back to Hebrides College when I started my driving career in Britain, really. And that was the best driving, like the best career move ever, back to driving.
So when did you do your test then?
For trucks in 2005, I think it was. And then during COVID, I started doing my C plus E. But of course, there were some delays. And like in Scotland, it was impossible to do. So I actually ended up doing that in Poland and passed first time with not a single minor, which I was very proud of.
Congratulations.
And since there, I started to drive first with trailers. Like the wagon and truck, and then moved to Arctics as well, and been
Right.
there ever since. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've talked about Hebrides haulage before, but for the benefit of those that haven't, just give us a little rundown of what that job entailed, because I always found it quite interesting, really, and the possibilities there would just be great. Because also at the time you were doing a little bit of writing for Truck and Driver magazine as well, weren't you? And I can remember an article in there with your little daff with its little cab top sleeper with a really sort of
Yeah,
short wheelbase, wasn't it?
the driving writing for truck and drivers may be a little bit too much to be said. They wanted to interview me because they thought that the job is interesting, and I do some like freelance journalism on the side, and I was like desperate to make a break into the like English language writing. And I offered, what if I write you a reportage instead of this interview? And they agreed, so I wrote this reportage for them. But of course, it was just one off. But yes, so that was there. And yes, I used to drive this DAF CF, which was 7.5 meters long, 18 tonner with split gearbox, 4/4, with this Pony Fantasy sleeper roof, which I actually really liked because it was big enough to sit up comfortably in it. And you had this clear separation between the working area and your accommodation area. So I really liked it.
Well, fair enough.
And for like 2 nights per week, it was sufficient. And of course, it was all to save on length because back then the ferries in Scotland were really, really expensive. Now it's kind of better, I think. But back then, every inch of length was costing a fortune. So they were having this like top sleeper class. And the job, I was based in Glasgow, and this company goes like when no truck went before, basically. So no major haulier or courier company is going to those really remote areas. And then you have some like big volume carriers like DR McLeod, for example. They like full trailers for Tesco and whatnot. But this particular company, they do mostly like small volume transports. So you may be delivering like 2 pallets of cattle feed to a farm, then a mini tractor, then a washing machine to some lady, then a machine part to a local like quarry. So you could have everything on the truck from like load of 10 pallets to basically an envelope with two screws in it. So it was a job that was never boring, and it was taking you to the most beautiful corners of Scotland. Like visiting Eriskay was one of my favorite places. There was this small building company that had this like little building on the top of the like cliff or the mountains, overlooking the bay with the beach, and the terminal for the Barra ferry. It was fantastic going there. I really loved it. So
I'm
yeah,
not
and it's a
surprised.
great company to work for. The boss is really a man who loves his job, and he takes care of the trucks. Maybe like if your radio speaker is rattling a bit, he won't be fixing that. But when you tell him something important is broken, it will be always done instantly. It's this kind of the boss that when the truck comes back from the service, he takes this like tension key and he checks every screw himself personally. So they do them. They don't have them like that anymore too often. But yeah, it's a great place to work. The work is not for everyone because it's a hard graft, a lot of physical handball and stuff like that. But the places you go reward you for everything.
Yeah, and it's going to be a case of no 2 days are ever going to be the same, are they? It's not like sort of regular work, is it, as such? It's potluck as to what and where you're going to get and go.
Yes, and you are really dependent on the weather because, like, Skybridge can be closed to the lorries because of the wind, or ferries may be cancelled, and you're stuck on the islands for even a few days. I've been stuck for a couple of days once, but some drivers were stuck for a week sometimes or whatever. So, yeah, it's a job when you're close to the nature and you also feel like a part of community because that was this great thing after working in the office doing the stupid Excel sheets and reports that nobody ever cared to read. Then you are ending in this job and you bring this like washing machine to this elderly lady and she is genuinely happy to have this new washing machine. It gives you the work satisfaction you will never get from any big corporation.
Brilliant. Yeah, that sounds like my kind of job, really.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you obviously finished with Hebrides. Where did you go from there?
Actually, that was when I had already my class one, and we were already thinking about moving to Finland. And Hebrides College, they got this wagon and drugs, but you don't get much experience with them because they are like on regular trunk routes, and you don't. I've been driving just once in Blue Moon. I was given the trailer. So I wanted some more experience before we go because I knew that in the new country it would be hard for me to find a job without a language. So I wanted to get as much experience as I got. So I started with just agencies and also some like direct jobs for some customers. Was basically like a freelance trucker, so to speak,
Got
over
you.
2022.
Yeah, fair enough. Was it
My last job in Scotland was doing whiskey tankers to
okay?
distilleries and back, night trunking, just the trailer swaps, but it was really nice.
Yeah, sounds all right. Then you ended up going to emigrating to Finland.
Yes.
Yeah, and how was that? Because that's quite a change. I mean, I love Finland. I think it's a fantastic country. But again, it's different to going there and actually living there. So, what did you think when you first arrived there?
Well, we had this comfortable situation. We moved because my girlfriend got a fairly good job here. So we had at least this security. My first experiences, like trucking wise, were not very good because I ended up in some like cowboy company that was taking advantage of the newcomers that were not really familiar with the rules and they weren't members of trade union yet. So luckily, I just slammed my doors and went home after less than 2 weeks because of the condition of their trucks. But some people who worked for them for much longer were never paid properly, and neither was I, but it was just a couple of hundred euros, so I cut my losses short because I was not accepting the condition of the vehicle they wanted me to drive. Then I ended up in the local food distribution company, which was a great company. But the most dull job I ever did, it was basically load the trailer, drive 20 minutes, unload the trailer, load it with empty boxes, back to the first place, unload the empty boxes, load. I'm sure I did more miles on the electric pump truck than on actual lorry in this job.
Flipping. Yeah, that's like a retirement job for when you're kind of done with driving and you just want something easy just to put a few pound in the bank with your pension, I think, by the sound of it.
Maybe, but this job was mostly actually young boys from the army and like newcomers without language. So it was a starting job, but still, my hourly rate was better than this whiskey job, which was like night shift ADR in Scotland. So that tells you something about conditions in Finland. And then I wanted to change it to drive tankers again, but I quit the last job too early because I was dying of boredom. And I just wanted to have a rest and like reset my mind before starting the new one. But that was when Finland closed the borders to Russia. And they had to move the drivers that were going to Russia to do the route I was like promised. I ended up without a job and it was really tough times in Finland. So I was unemployed for a year. And the like equivalent of job center sent me to full-time Finnish course. So I've been actually going to school like every day for several hours. It was fun experience, and I speak some Finnish now, so I can like communicate on a very basic level.
Yeah.
And after that, I got a job for a removal company doing, I was supposed to do the trunks to Spain. And then I had a car accident and I was recovering for 3 months. So that job was as well as gone.
Yeah.
And that was when we spoke last time. And I have to say something that you were kind enough to tell to your listeners that if someone has a job for me, to contact me. And your podcast was works great because I had a new job before you even published it. So.
So someone was clairvoyant and listened to us talking. Before I thought you were going to say they heard the podcast and offered you a job, but not quite,
No, I
obviously.
got a job like a day before the podcast came out. So yes.
Fantastic. Excellent. So
So I work now for a company that mostly transport machinery and some special kind of loads all over Europe. And also they do humanitarian help to Ukraine regularly. And tomorrow I'm going for the third time to Ukraine with them.
Right, okay. Because I'm aware of the company that you're working for, because I've seen them obviously in Finland, but also I've seen them everywhere. I think after we last spoke, I think I then did my Greek trip, and then there was one of them. I sort of pronounce it Hoisk, but that's probably said
It's Hosika.
Hosika. Yeah,
Yeah, it's a
okay.
guy's name actually, yes.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
knew I'd be absolutely destroying this company name, the same as what I do with any European company name. That's a very British thing to do, isn't it? We sort of we'll say it how it looks, and get it woefully wrong. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think I was in the south of France. I see one parked up. I've seen them in Spain and all
Yeah,
over the
my
place.
first trip they sent me to Basque country, so they
Ah,
are not
perfect.
beating around the bush.
So when you did that, did you go overland? Did you get the ferry like direct to Germany, or what route did you take to get down?
Oh, it depends. It all depends. Sometimes we go through the Baltics and Poland. Sometimes we go on this really long ferry to Lübeck or
Yes.
Travemünde,
Yep.
and we actually got another depot there. But it's mostly like when you get to Europe, you stay in Europe for several weeks. So,
Okay.
like part of the trucks are working Nordics country, bringing trailers to ferries. Then the trailers go on their own, and other truck picks them up. They also do this like express freight, which means they like line up the trucks all across Europe, and the trailer is just passed from one truck to another to get
Got
to
you.
destination as quick as possible.
Got
So,
you. Yeah.
yeah, it's a very nice company. I was hearing so many great things about this company. I was trying to get to them for like 2 years since
Yeah.
I first sent them my CV, I think. And I'm there now, and I'm actually quite happy with everything. It's a great company, great atmosphere. The equipment is nice, and I
Excellent.
can't say anything wrong.
Yeah, oh, you can't beat it. So you're about to leave with your third humanitarian load. Whereabouts are they going in Ukraine? Is it all to Kiev, or whereabouts does it go to?
Oh, it varies. My first trip was to Ivano-Frankivsk, which is like a couple of hours. You just go to Lviv and then like another hour south. My second trip, which was over Easter, I went as far as to Vinnytsia, which is like central Ukraine. And now I'm going just across the border again in this like top left corner of Ukraine, just like tucked between Poland and Belarus. So it will be a very short trip into Ukraine this time.
Right. Have you felt in danger there at all with what's going on? Or have you not really
No, no,
not seen
no.
any signs of fighting as such?
Well, I've seen signs of fight. Yes, when I
Yeah.
was in Vinnytsia, there was this government building that was droned just like 2 days before I arrived. I was not allowed to take any pictures, or they were even like, "Don't look at this," because there's like SBU, the security forces of Ukraine will come and see what are you doing. So, but yes, there was a building, the government building. I will not give you details for obvious reasons,
Fair
but
enough.
a government building was bombed and like 8 people died, I was told, and like all buildings around that were had the like the windows replaced with plywood, and you can still see some debris scattered on the street. Also seen some when I was driving, I've seen a military a base that was badly bombed. But some time ago, I guess, and also I've seen some private, like the commie blocks, kind of buildings that were clearly bombed.
Yeah.
So yes, you can see a truck. But you know, when I it's I want to stress it because if you look at this, like internet today, it's full of propaganda from all sides, and you can often see people doing movies from Ukraine when there's this bustling nightlife, and they said, "What war when people like going to the pub and restaurants and everything?" I when I first came to Ukraine with my own car, which we can talk about later, I ended up in Lviv, and I drove through whole Lviv from north to south through the city center, and I've seen this, like it looked like Krakow, like a party town, like nicely dressed girls and open restaurants and like Volt couriers delivering food on these electric bikes and everything, and it looked perfectly fine as long as we were in the car. And then I arrived to my destination. I met the soldier who was taking the car from me, and I told him, like, "I'm really hungry. Can we get and grab something?" And we walked 500 meters to some nearby restaurant. And during this first walk in Ukraine, 500 meters, I've seen like two young boys. One was maybe 20 something, and he had no legs. He has prosthetic legs. And the other had no hand and really scarred face. And there was also some little girl on the baby buggy, and she had no legs. And she was like carried on by some very young girl that could probably be her sister, but someone told me that it's often that like parents are died and like older siblings or cousins are taking care of the kids that survive. So this war is always close. You can feel it.
I think it sounds like the mentality there of the people is much the same as what the British and I presume the Germans as well in like World War II, where it's a case of don't let it get you down, just sort of carry on as normal as best you can. And I think a lot of it as well, the mentality changes to, this could be my last day on earth, so I'm just going to enjoy it. Get out there, have some drinks, have some nice food. Just don't worry about it. Such it kind of has the reverse effect of striking fear into people. They become more, I can't think of the word, that certainly not gung-ho, but a bit more carefree as such. So, but I mean,
I'm not sure if that's it.
I was going to say,
You know,
I've never
I
lived in a war
spoke.
zone, so I wouldn't be, no.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Like, it's probably not for us to speak. And I was told that it's more like, you know, we have this war for 4 years. We cannot be like stressed all the time. Can we go and have a drink with the friends? Sometimes it's just this. I don't know if that would be okay if I can plug something here, because after I did this trip with my car, I did this like podcast in English, which was basically a reportage. And the second part of this podcast is basically interview with this Ukrainian people. And I think instead of we trying to make out what they think, if the listeners are curious, they can go there and listen to them directly. I think
It
that
sounds
would be
good.
better than if we try to speak for them. So
Absolutely.
yeah,
Well,
so we can maybe link it in the description.
yeah, definitely. And I'll put links on all the social media everywhere as well.
Yeah, what I would like to say, if that's okay, rather like how to help, because that's something we can talk about, and that's something I feel I have something to say. I would not really like to say what Ukrainian people feel, because I would just make a fool of myself, so there's no point in that.
This episode of Matt's Trucking Great podcast is kindly sponsored by KLM Transport Services Limited. KLM offer vehicle transport, light haulage, and also vehicle storage based in Exeter. For more information, please visit www.klm-trans.co.uk. Thank you very much, KLM, for your kind support. So how can people help if they want to?
Yeah, maybe if it's okay, I will start from the beginning, because
Of course.
when this big war started, I really wanted to help. You know, I'm Polish. My country is just across the border, and we have common history with Ukraine. Sometimes difficult, but it's very close. And there were these convoys going from Britain, and I wanted to join. I even offered, and some friends were putting me in touch. But then I spoke with, that was the first lesson I got, because I spoke with my friends who were volunteering on the ground in Poland, particularly Martina, my very close friend who lives right at the border. She is a journalist. And, you know, there was like 1 million of Ukrainians coming this first month. It was just enormous movement of people. And I spoke with her, and she told me openly, "Don't send us stuff, because when I got a family with like poorly dressed kids that are cold, we have this whole huge warehouses full of humanitarian help that is flooding from all over Europe, and it's great, but there's simply not enough people to sort it.
Right.
So if I need like size 12 shirt for, or jacket for this little girl, I won't be going to this big warehouse trying to find that. I just need to go to the supermarket and buy it for her because she's cold." So she said, "At this stage, we need money." So I decided not to go with this convoy, and instead, as I was working as this freelancer trucker for agency, and I usually was doing 3 shifts per week, I decided I will do 4 shifts per week, and I will donate this money from extra shift. So every 2 weeks I was donating to Ukraine, and every 2 weeks I was donating to some other charity causes, because back in Poland, everybody like rushed to help Ukraine, and some of other needs were forgotten. So I tried to do that. And this is the first lesson. If you want to help, you need to first speak to people. And I can give you a story that some people really want to help. And there was this British guy who loaded his camper up with some like baby products, and he drove all the way. He got in trouble in Germany because he was overweight. Then he broke down in Poland, and some Polish people helped him to make the van running. And then he went to Ukraine. He knew nobody. He just arrived to Lviv, and then he went to a supermarket, and he found out that all these products he just brought all the way from Britain, he can buy in the supermarket in Lviv at half price. So this is the most important thing. If you want to help, you need to get
Do some research.
and you need to speak to people who know what's needed.
Yes, fair enough.
So that was my first contact with this humanitarian help. Then when I moved to Finland, I moved with my own van, and I needed to drive this van back to Poland because it was like in stage of being converted to a camper. Actually, our move went so ex unexpectedly that I flew to Poland, and my friend was just doing some electric works. He says, "Okay, is the van drivable like now?" So I'm just taking it from you. And actually, till this day, I got some cables hanging like tied with cable ties because he never finished. And as I had this van in Finland, I contacted on Twitter some Ukrainian people I knew, and I asked them, "Listen, I got this van. It's going to Poland. I can take a ton of humanitarian goods for you, but not to Ukraine, because my passport was actually not valid, so I couldn't go outside of the European Union when I could travel with my Polish ID." So they loaded it, and I delivered it to the humanitarian like distribution center in northern Poland for the Ukrainian trucks to take it further. Then when I came back to Finland, they asked me if I can drive car for the Ukrainian army. So I drove this car again to the Ukrainian border, and someone took over from me at the border. And then I've been busy with all these adventures we already spoke, and now I'm back with Hosike, and they are doing this humanitarian help, but it's a completely different story. Oh no, actually, though, I was once more with my own car, because I mentioned I had this accident, and I was rear-ended in this car, and the insurance says it's not worthy of repair. But I had this car since new; it was 16 years old, like it was perfect mint condition. I really cherished this car, and I didn't want it to scrap it. So I spoke with the insurance company. They told me like for 200 euros you can keep it. And while the MOT was still valid, because I was told because there's some like construction element is bent, I won't pass a new MOT with it. So in the last days of MOT, I drove it all the way to Ukraine to this soldier, which I was put in touch by some friends, and they really need this a car, because they operate in this like a drone warfare, and they are doing this. They are not actually like the frontline unit, but they are providing informations for the others. Yeah. So this car
Intelligence.
is not doing actually combat duties, but it's like doing like delivery on the second lines, like duty fighters.
Reconnaissance or something like that,
No,
maybe.
I mean like just logistics support, I would say. Like delivers drones to the batteries to a drone, some documents, because army is a lot of bureaucracy and so on. And now, if I may say, because It may come handy if someone wants to give a car to Ukraine as well. They desperately need all kinds of cars. But again, you have to find, you cannot just drive there. You have to find someone who will take this car because also the various type of cars are needed by various units. Like my car can be very handy in this unit. It will be useless in another unit because it was a small city car, yeah? So you need to first find contacts or contact some biggest charities that do that. And then like army takes pickups and big vehicles, but the personal cars, which also are needed on the front line, they are not formally taken into the army. There are some NGOs that take them as donations, and then they like loan them to soldiers. It's a lot of bureaucracy involved, and of course you need to properly import it as the humanitarian donation. So you need to know what are you doing, or you need someone who knows what they are doing to help you.
Fair enough. So I guess the humanitarian work that you're doing for Hoseke will just continue indefinitely.
Well, as long as it's needed, let's hope not indefinitely.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it, to
Yeah.
stop. I mean the whole world seems to be kicking off with one another at the moment, and as always, it's always just the civilians that really suffer.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if the country invading you is country like Russia, that it's just basically a terrorist country, and they attack civilian targets just to like in hope to break people's spirits and stuff like that. So yes, they need everything. So this work is completely different. So like I'm doing that as part of my normal driving duties. It's like considered one of the jobs I do. Like last week I was carrying a big cables, and now I'm carrying humanitarian help to Ukraine, although of course only volunteers go to Ukraine. They won't force the driver to go there if the driver don't want to. Although Finnish people are very like supporting of Ukraine, very friendly, so they have no problem to find drivers that would be willing to go. And there is this like network of associations and NGOs working in Finland, some like Society of Ukrainians in Finland and stuff like that, but also Finnish humanitarian NGOs that are aiming to help Ukraine. And there is this big like umbrella organization that organizes all this humanitarian helps, and Hosike provides them basically with trucks and drivers, and we ship there. So sometimes it's like my first trip, I was delivering a full load of some like hand sanitizers and other like chemicals for a hospital, which companies are donating because they overstocked during COVID, and this would soon expire. So if they see we won't be able to burn through them because it's more than we need, then they will donate it to Ukraine because in Ukraine they need everything, and instead of going to waste, it will be used there. And my second trip, I mostly carried some heavy stuff like generators and industrial heaters, and also some hospital equipment. And now I'm carrying basically the complete hospital, like hospital beds, some equipment, some rehabilitation devices for physiotherapy or whatever. And it's going to a hospital that will be helping veterans who were injured during the fight for freedom. So that's my third trip now, and I'm going with this equipment. The truck is loaded basically to the roof. As I said, it's a complete hospital, starting from hospital beds, ending with like vials of insulin for children and chairs and fire extinguishers and air conditioning units, like complete hospital. And the truck is loaded that Mardo from Habitis College could come and learn a few things, because I never seen my truck being jumped to the roof so much. They actually spent a bunch of guys, like 10 guys or something, they were handballing the stuff for several days. They first went to Rauma to get some equipment, then they were loading something in our yard. And now, yesterday, actually, there is this another logistics center in on the outskirts of Helsinki. I'm not to tell where exactly it is, but it's in the greater Helsinki area. and like 10 guys were loading that several hours. I arrived at 5 and I've been giving them a little hand, but I'm not much use because I don't speak Ukraine, so you know they speak between themselves. It's quicker if I just get out of their hair. But I came at 5 and we finished at midnight, so my truck is now parked there because of course I ran out of my driving time. So of course, if any Vossa man wants to ask, I was volunteering during my free time, so
Yes, of
it's all
course.
good.
But incidentally, you pointed out to me as well via text a while ago, when you're on humanitarian aid work, you're TACO exempt, is that correct? Or not quite?
Not quite. It's actually the legal side of that is such a terrible mess because that arrives for like some emergency relief. But what we do is like commercial haulage of the humanitarian aid. So the actual humanitarian aid is donated for free, but like formally speaking, the company is paid. I'm paid as a driver to drive it. So it's like for higher rewards. So in Europe, we have to stick to tacos. In Ukraine, in theory, they are now following this European like taco rules. They switched from this. What's the other one? A something.
AETR is the
Yeah,
others.
they switched from that to European standards. But there are some like bylaws. I'm not familiar with that. Basically, like if you say I'm with humanitarian help, they will let you go. So in humanitarian transport in Ukraine, like I'm trying to stick to my taco as much as possible. But it's not very possible, to be frank. I can tell you exactly why.
Fair
But
enough.
then it will be like I won't get into any trouble. And then when I go back to Europe, of course I stick to taco again. I always when I like went too much over taco or something, I take the full 24 hours break after I get into Poland again. And I got some documents confirming that I was doing this humanitarian help. And of course, I got all printouts from the Tahoe and I explained every single issue I had. So, for example, during my last trip, we spent 12 hours on the border. It was like the same border I went last time, but took us almost 3 times longer. It's unpredictable. So, when we crossed, I was into my 17th hour of my shift. So, of course, we went to the nearest truck stop, we parked up. And we were welcomed for free because they don't charge trucks with humanitarian help. I parked there for 9 hours, get a proper sleep, and then we drove. And we had to be in our destination next morning because there were a bunch of soldiers to handle it off. Or like not really soldiers, there were some other military. I'm not even sure who they were, but like there were people to handle the stuff. And we had to be there on time, but as we were driving through the night, so my plan was there just to drive there, park up, and it takes them hours and hours to handle it out, so I could have my break and even sleep if they need be. But this time I was driving with this like logistic coordinator who was going in the small van behind me, and she said we have to stop because there is some drone alarm when we are going where we are going. So we actually parked up on some gas station illegally as well, but they say it's a humanitarian transport. They said, okay, just park here where the delivery tankers are coming. So you are okay to park here. And I slept for 5 hours, and then at dawn, when the sky was clear, we continued to drive. So again, my taco was completely, you know.
Messed up.
Yeah, it was not good. But you know, if there is a drone alarm, I think it's an emergency enough to break your taco rules, I would say.
I would tend to agree, to be fair.
Yeah, so then I arrived there and they handled the small stuff. Then I had to drive to another place because forklifts were waiting for this like industrial stoves and generators and everything. And then they invited me to like a hostel for construction workers in the building companies. So I have to drive across the town to park up there in secure yard. And then I went to sleep because, yeah, it was about time. I was on my legs like for 24 hours with just this 4 hours sleep. So it's a completely different thing to your normal everyday duties. But you know, you are doing the job that it's needed. So,
So what does the future hold then? You're obviously Very happy at Hosaka. You've got no plans of leaving. You're just hoping to keep on trucking with them, I presume.
Yes, I really like them. The job is interesting. We carry all the weird stuff like transformers, this big cable drums, armored vehicles, farm machinery. There's a lot to learn for me because they got maybe 50 trucks, but over 100 trailers, and some of them are like transformers, like extendable this way, extendable that way, opening roofs, sliding sides, whatever. Like every trailer is different, so I'm still learning. Of course, there is a lot of new stuff for me. Also, how to secure the loads. I've been never using chains before, for example. So that's a new skill for me. And yes, the company is great. It's the staff is very friendly, and the job is never boring. And I'm happy to do like really long, several weeks on the road, and then have month off. And then
Yeah.
again, several weeks on the road and month off. So that's how we spoke with the boss. That would suit me great. So yeah. And also, it's nice because in Finland it's pretty acceptable to park your truck anyway, like everywhere when it's legal to drive, you can park there basically. So I live in Helsinki. The company is over 2 hours north, but I live in Helsinki where we have two ferry terminals.
Yeah.
So whenever I come from ferry, I can even take a split rest and go home for the rest of the night.
Ah,
Or
perfect.
sometimes when there is like no jobs, I'm parked at home and waiting for another trailer to come to the one of the ferry terminals because I got Vuosaari on the east of Helsinki.
Yeah.
Western Harbour is literally 20 minutes drive from my home, and then also Hanko, which we use extensively. It's just 2 hours from me, so I'm really good placed. So whenever there is a chance, I'm parked at home, and sometimes I even park on my street because I don't want to park in front of anyone's windows. But there's like a playground farther down the street, so I can park there and not bother anyone. But when I got this like rear steer platforms, I don't want to drive it into a small road. So like
Yeah.
10 minutes walk from me, there is a small industrial estate. I can park there as well.
No, perfect. So if you're having like a month off as such, are you cab hopping or do you keep the same truck? How does it work?
Every time so far, I got a different truck,
Right,
but
okay.
they all in a fairly good condition. Now I have one of the oldest, which was like not great. So like, don't get me wrong. Everything important works fine. It drives brilliant. This V8 Scania from I think 2014. It used to be a flagship. It's some limited edition, and it's like Scandinavian specification. So it's very well insulated and got double glazing and everything. Better than half of the British homes, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds right.
But also it has this air conditioning unit on the roof and everything. But like the cab is worn, like the cupboards are not staying up because this like gas struts are worn and some lights are not working. So it's not great for living. But because I'm going to Ukraine now regularly, they tend not to send the newest truck there.
Yeah.
Not only for, of course, like the risk related to the Russian invasion, but also so because the roads there are, some roads are good,
Yeah.
some roads are terrible, but the worst is when you drive on the road and the road is really great and then suddenly it isn't. And I don't mean it isn't great, it's just suddenly there is no road. And especially if you drive at night, it can be terrible. So last trip, we had to replace the tire because the tire was damaged. And things like that. But driving in Ukraine is also a very different experience. I'm still shocked. And I learned to drive in 1990s Poland, so I've seen some shit. But
Yeah.
Ukraine is just beyond anything I've seen before. Like I've been in the traffic jam recently, and of course people were overtaking me on the hard shoulder and on
Yeah.
the left side. And then the truck in front of me blocked half shoulder, so a bus came on the grass, and he almost ended up in the ditch. But he managed to save himself, and then he thought, "Oh, maybe going on the grass is a stupid idea." So he went to the left side on the road and starting to drive on the hard shoulder on the left, like against the oncoming traffic. So, and that was a bus full of people. So,
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
everybody is speeding to such extent that, you know, when you got this like speed camera thingies, which not send you a ticket, but they just display like smiley face and sad face if you go too fast. So there is a speed limit is 60. If you go 74, it still gives you smiley face.
Fantastic. It sounds like the driving hasn't changed since I last went there, and and Russia was just the same. It was just wacky races. You'd put up to a set of lights, and before you knew it, you'd have. I've been undertaken on the hard shoulder by buses, by trucks, cars, and yeah, they just come, they just go, try and get round you whichever way they can. They're just, I don't know what it is about getting that far east, and the driving standard just really does plummet. I was gonna say it's nice to hear that it's not changed, but for safety's sake, it's probably they could do with a bit of improvement, I think.
But I have to say, I was impressed. Like in some village, a guy, it was a block post because they got this like military slash police block posts like regularly in the country. And a guy came from the side road and he should give way, but he didn't. So he braked very harshly and he ended up straight in front of me. I had to go around him, barely made it. And the policeman, like, sprinted from this block post and starting running at him, waving this like, I don't know how it's called in English. We called it
Yeah,
lollipop
the
in Polish, the
lollipop.
little thing. So the police is there, and you can see them. They are pulling cars for speeding, and there's a lot of speed traps. So they are doing a lot to improve the driving standards, I guess. And there's a lot happening as well as when it comes to road construction. Although the standards of the like road constructions, health and safety, like compared to Britain, it's also something else. You got like a pothole on the like motorway, and people just working there with hand tools. There's like no warning, no nothing. Just some guys in orange vest are fixing the pothole in the middle of speeding cars. It's just crazy. But there is a lot of work being done, and
Oh, fantastic. Right, Tomash, I think I've taken up more than enough of your time for the day, as it's precious because you haven't got much time off. So it's been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you.
I'm leaving tomorrow for this. You were asking me actually. I'm going for the Hanko to Gdynia ferry, which I've
Right.
been on last time. It's very fun because it's not really a ferry. It's like a ro-ro ship, which can take 12 drivers, and
Okay.
everything else is unaccompanied trailers. I have to say it's funny because it's like six cabins, two drivers in each cabin, and
Yeah.
the small cabin was like sofa, TV. Two tables, some like fridge with snacks and kettle and coffee and stuff like that.
Yep.
And there's this poster that's saying, "This is not a ferry. We don't sell alcohol. We don't sell tobacco. There is no shops, pubs, or duty free or sauna on it. But it's a Finnish ship, so there is sauna on it."
It's got to be on there somewhere.
Yeah, that was actually the first thing when I started my first day in Hosike, and they given me a guy to like walk me around the company premises. The first place he took me to was the company sauna.
Brilliant. We need more of that in the UK, I say.
Oh yeah, you could learn a lot. Like after driving in the UK, and I was on the lucky bit because I was driving in Scotland. I was like sick whenever I had to go to England because the trucker's infrastructure is terrible, but we spoke about that in one of the podcasts before.
Yes,
But
absolutely.
here I'm like so amazed. Like we go to Hanko regularly to swap the trailers, and they got this small containers. I found already few scattered around the town because the town is full of trucks parked everywhere, of course. And it's like two toilets, one of this like self-cleaning toilets, and the
Yeah.
third cubicle is a shower, self-cleaning shower with hot water, and it's
Wow.
free.
Oh,
So you
amazing.
got small parking, like you can park 10 trucks there, and you got a free shower there. And of course on the big truck parks there's this containers as well. So actually I don't understand. Sorry for going on the tangent
It's
here, but I
okay.
don't understand why it cannot be like that in Britain. Like put these containers, like charge people a quid every time they go to the shower, and like
Yeah.
send some cleaner once a day to
Yeah.
clean what the self-cleaning machine won't manage.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
you got self, like, it should self-fund.
Yes.
from that. So I don't know why they do that in Britain, but well,
Yeah. Apathy, costs, and yeah, who knows what else. So, but yeah, what a concept. That'd be ideal.
So
Yeah.
if someone is listening to us, put these containers for truckers in Britain so they can take a shower in every bigger lie-by.
Yeah, absolutely.
That
Couldn't.
will make wonders for your AGV driver's shortage, I
Oh,
believe.
it definitely would.
But leaving Britain aside, if I may say something in the end, like
Yes, of
keep
course.
helping Ukraine because they are fighting hard. They're really brave people, and you know it's not just a slogan. They fight for everyone because if Ukraine wasn't fighting, you would be sending like humanitarian convoys now to Estonia, Poland, Moldavia, whatever. They
Yeah.
are fighting for Europe, so we should support them, especially now when America left them alone and they are not helping anymore. And this is not just war. The Russia is attacking the civilian infrastructure. They are hunting people with drones, killing random civilians. So every kind of help is needed. Although, if you want to help, either find someone who knows what's needed and where, or just donate to some big organization that is aware of what they are doing.
Yeah, fair enough. Can't say fairer than that, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's support them because they need us.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I'm sorry that I'm getting it, but I want to say one thing more. See,
You go on.
I feel bad when I go there and they greet me like I'm some kind of VIP, like celebrity. I'm not joking. Like last time I've been there and they were unloading this truck and I was trying to help, but I was just getting in the way because I don't speak the language. So, you know, I just step aside. And then I ask, like, is there a shop? I need like some food I need to buy maybe while you are unloading. I will get there. Actually wanted some energy drink or whatever because I was already falling on my nose. And they gave me, I'm joking, not like the security service of Ukrainian a police car. And he drove me, he chauffeured me to the shops, waited for me, brought me back. Then they hosted me in this hostel, which
Wow.
was like, let's say it's Soviet standard. I would feel more comfortable sleeping in my lorry, really. But they were so welcoming and so nice to me and everything that I just had to stay there because I had no heart to tell them no, I don't need it. Like
Yeah.
I want to scream like stop treating me like a hero, stop thanking me. It's not me who
Yeah.
needs to be thanked. It's your like soldiers, your heroes, your this. I know maybe this podcast is too long, but I have to tell you a story to just give you the picture.
Go on
So
in.
on my first trip with Hosike, I get this like local coordinator, which was a woman, maybe around my age, 45 or something. We spoke like I'm Polish, she's Ukrainian, so we can communicate on some very basic level. Although I understand less Ukrainian than she understand Polish, but she also spoke French, so we somehow managed. And she told me her story as we were heading from one delivery place to another. So imagine that you are in your 20s, you go away to work in France because you want to earn better money. You work harder for 15 years, you build yourself a house in the village you are from, and you buy your parents a house in the nice outskirts of Kiev so they can retire there.
Yeah.
Then you come back, and within a year, your house and your company that you started after moving back to Ukraine is in pieces. It's bombed to oblivion by Russians because it was in Donbas.
Yeah.
And your parents' villa that you bought them from this money that you earned in France for 15 years was in the small town called Bucha. So your father was tortured. Your brother was murdered because he happened to be there with their parents. Your mom, in her like 60 somethings, was raped. And you are left with nothing. Your husband is in the army. Your son is in the army. You wanted to go to the army, but you were refused to because of your health. So instead, you got this postman in this charity that deals with veterans, and you deal with people who have like no legs. I had 10 guys to handball stuff of me, and they were either like veterans in their 60s, and there were two guys. One was with some spine injury, so he couldn't lift, and the other one had a prosthetic legs. That's your reality now in Ukraine. I don't know. I know it's not in the mood of your podcast, but I think it's important. We just cannot imagine what life in Ukraine means now.
No,
So
definitely not.
if you can leave that story, so people can think, just put yourself in the shoes of this lady who worked all her life to get a good life in her country she loves, and the Russians come and destroy everything for her. So that's why they need our help, and that's why I'm pushing. I'm sorry, I'm like taking over your podcast and pushing this pro-Ukraine agenda, but we really have to help them.
No, it's fair enough. Yeah, I couldn't imagine something like that, having just losing everything just like that. So there we go. So yeah, if you can help, please do. Simple as that, isn't it?
And I promise next month's podcast will be fun trucking stuff again.
Okay, mate, no problem. Well, it's lovely to speak to you. And have a safe.
Thank you for having me again, and
No problem. Have a safe trip, and we'll perhaps catch up with you soon.
I will send you some pictures so you can see what's
Perfect.
happening.
Yep, brilliant. Okay, Thomas, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.